welcome, folks, as always, to the Slowpokes podcast. I am Slowpoke number 2, David Chalante.
And I'm Slowpoke number 1, John Nicolaitis.
And how are you all doing, Slowpokes?
So, yeah, how are you doing?
I guess I just addressed us then.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was terrified because I forgot what number I was. And there's only two numbers.
How you doing, Slowpokes? I mean, I'm good. John, are you fine?
I'm fine. I mean, just the same existential worries, but mostly fine.
Yes. I think but mostly fine kind of summarizes all of us. Yes. To some point, but yeah, welcome everyone to Slowpokes podcast. As yep. As like we just did say,
it's number 14.
Episode 14, so we're charging into season 2. You probably heard a couple of our other off week episodes by now, which is fun.
Definitely. And also should have seen some of our Let's Play videos.
Yes, that should be just wrapping up by the time this is released, right?
If not already, who knows?
Yeah.
Haven't planned that far.
Hopefully that worked well. And we have plans at this point for what we're going to do in the future with that.
Yes.
But today we are doing something well-trodden-pathed, and that is looking back at a couple of games that we did not play at the time that they came out, and now we have played them.
Yes, neither of us played these games when they came out.
And what is worth mentioning about this episode that makes it a little bit unique is that there are two games that we're covering today. Two shorter indie experiences, both, I believe, products of various kinds of game jams.
Yeah, different game jams, because they are different games, but yes.
And it's kind of ludicrous to think of one of them being producible under the constraints that the other was produced under, just because of the extra effort that would have gone into it.
Yeah, that's true.
But why don't you reveal the games that we are covering?
The first one will be Pony Island. And the second game will be Super Hot.
Yes. So Pony Island is a game I played much closer to the date it came out. Yeah. Super Hot is something both of us have only just played in the last couple of days.
Yes. I did play some endless mode.
Yeah.
But I hadn't played the whole experience
until now. And so both of these games are very interesting. There are things that are similar and things that are different. We're going to be basically cutting this episode straight down the center.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to listen to the Super Hot section, which will be in the second half of the episode, without listening to the Pony Island section because of spoilers or whatever,
it's up to you. Totally fine.
I will insert the time where you can jump to now.
24 minutes and 10 seconds.
The future!
Cool, so just jump there.
Yep.
And the Pony Island thing will be up front. So why don't we just jump right in with our expectations for Pony Island?
That sounds like a good idea. So I think with Pony Island, for me, when people were sort of talking about it, they didn't really tell you very much, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a theme for both of the games that we covered.
So when Pony Island came out, a lot of people were talking about it and that it was, you know, interesting and fun and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's one of these, like, out-of-nowhere surprise kind of games.
Yeah, but not a lot of people were talking about the game itself too much. In fact, one YouTuber I watched, they played a completely different game and pretended it was Pony Island as a joke. It was like some actual Ponies Are Forever Facebook online game.
One of those really quite funny.
Yeah, you know, link in the description, all that. But
yeah, that's also much funnier after having played the game than it is probably, that it probably sounds just up front where it just sounds like trolling, but, you know, that's very funny.
I thought it was cute because, you know, I agree with the people. You don't really want to have any of this experience spoiled for you, especially because it's a very quick experience.
Yeah, like, just kind of tying back into that, because it is a spoiler-sensitive game, and so we are going to, less so Pony Island than Super Hot, but we will try and, you know, manage that as we go ahead, as we normally do, so rest assured that if we run into anything, you'll be forewarned. My expectations of the game were pretty much the same. Like, I heard a lot of people talking about it, saying it was great, cheap, and quick, so just play it, without saying a lot of what it was. I was kind of turned off by it because it's called Pony Island, and this did come out sort of early, I think it was January 2016.
Something like that, yeah.
And bronyism was still kind of a thing at that point. David. Like, it wasn't, like, now it's completely evaporated into the ether as far as public consciousness is concerned.
I guess ponies aren't magic.
Yeah. Deep. But no, at that point, it was still right at the tail end of, like, the meme-ishness of a lot of that stuff, and so it was still incredibly exhausting. And so I was turned off the idea of playing this game until I heard a podcaster that I like, Paul Verhoeven, not that one, explicitly say that it was not Brony-related. And so I jumped in maybe like a month or two after it was released.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my expectations were pretty much the same, I guess. I was expecting something interesting, without really knowing much more about it.
Yeah, I can't put my finger on why I didn't want to play this game. So when we put it on the list to get to, I was kind of like that kind of happy so that I'd like have a reason to play it.
Yeah.
Because for some, I don't know why, I just didn't want to play it. Like, it was like this thing had landed in my head.
I feel a little bit like that with Fallout New Vegas. Like, even as I kind of dread playing it, I'm glad that I'm kind of being forced to.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I get that. But I think we should sort of move into, can't really move onto a video game unless we print it all out and lie on a pile of CDs.
Yeah. Okay. That was a fun stream of consciousness that we all bore witness to.
Pony Island has this kind of, what is it, 2D, like retro aesthetic kind of thing going on.
Like, if you don't know anything else about the game, you probably know that. And that's that it's, you know, 8-bit graphics, 8-bit sounds. It kind of has like a CRT arcade machine. But really, like, we're talking like 70s kind of arcade machines.
Totally,
like,
yeah.
Very, very, very rudimentary kind of aesthetic.
Although you do control the whole game with the mouse. But apart from that, the game is presented like it's one of these old school retro kind of experiences, and has all the trappings of it as well, whether it's the sound effects or just how the game looks or how you interface.
One of the things I really actually love about it is they emulate the, I don't know what causes this in a CRT screen, but all of the dots on the screen are white, kind of like you would see in something like Pong.
Yeah.
But you have the blue and red kind of shadows behind the image, of behind each of the sprites. It looks very like retro and very very technologically limited. It's a very good effect.
They emulated the cathode ray tube itself. You know, shoot. It's like, yeah. It's the way that happens is a very interesting thing that we're not going to talk about right now
because
neither of us are qualified. But yeah, they do get those really effects, and also the screen kind of fishbowls too, like a CRT.
Yes, I love that. Yeah, you know? And if you move, because you have a mouse. Like, as you say, you control the game with a mouse.
Yeah.
And so you have a mouse pointer that appears on this CRT that you're looking at. Mm-hmm. And when you bring it to the corners, it kind of, as you say, fishbowls out.
Yeah.
And there's kind of a dappling, like a vignetting that I'm not sure if that's supposed to be a product of the technology or if it's like dirt on the screen that you're looking at.
Could be both.
But yeah, it looks very, very cool. And it's reminiscent of anything like any of the Fallout 3 onward kind of things, when you look at the Pip-Boy and stuff like that. It's a similar kind of thing that it kind of pulls at in your chest.
So, mini spoiler, though, the game does actually render some things in 3D.
Yes.
Right? And it uses that to sort of immerse you into the experience.
Because one of the things that's very cool about Pony Island is it's a sort of a game within a game
where
you're a player and your screen is looking through the eyes of the character who's sitting in front of an arcade cabinet. That's what I'm trying to find, cabinet. And so there are little moments where, like, for example, you find little tickets and I'll print off. Whenever you earn a ticket, you see your player's 3D, like
hand.
Full 3D rendered hand in something that's very, like, very contemporary looking graphics.
Yeah.
Pull that ticket up and hold it in front of your face. And so you have this sudden, like, distillation of the layers that you're looking at. It's very tangible and very, like, present.
When that hand comes up, it always feels like the screen just, like, pops into, like, this weird three dimensions as you just realize there's a gulf of space between the two of you.
Kind of like when you're watching a movie and you hear, like, someone cough and you suddenly remember that you're in a theater.
Yeah.
It's this very interesting way that they capture that. And it seems very minor on the surface, but there is something that's very contextualizing about that and makes you feel, like I said, it's very tangible.
And the game, I mean, like, the game uses this to sort of immerse you in it.
Yeah. The fact that you're playing a cabinet is relevant to the story in a couple of ways. We'll go into that later to try and keep it a bit spoiler-free. But the premise of the game is that this is very early on it's established. You start getting messages printed on the screen from the developer of the game.
Yes.
And their tone and the character voice that they use is very immediately communicated because it's very, all of the letters are in capitals. Every time a letter drops in, it's got a very dun 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 kind of blocky sound to it. And so you get the impression of this kind of petulant, self-important, trollish kind of indie game dev. And a lot of the comedy comes from the juxtaposition of the character's self-importance to what it is you're looking at.
Yeah.
And, like, the seriousness of the stakes compared to how the aesthetics of that environment are kind of communicated to you? Like, I feel like that's very nebulous, what I've just said there.
Yeah, so when I did her sphere at the game, some of it was spoiled to me. And so I was kind of expecting it to be more horror themed, you know, you're there, the cabinet, there's you, you're trapped, all this kind of stuff. But it only really uses that to affect the comedy in the game itself and just to support the jokes. And
I'm about to say it's ironic. It's not like dramatic irony of the direst sense, but it is that whole thing of this character who's talking to you, the game developer who's talking to you, presenting themselves as being very serious and this all being extremely important. The irony of like them being completely unaware of how they appear to you and the tone that you're encouraged to use when you engage with the game as well.
And like, not only what kind of praise that they want from you in return for the experience.
It's just exactly.
Like all played up for jokes.
Oh God, there was a really funny moment I want to talk about later. But I feel like we are running into a problem here where we can't really talk much more about the game without going into spoilers. So if you are planning on playing this without spoilers, now would probably be a good time to leave us.
Yep.
Once again, if you want to jump straight into Superhot, I will have had the timestamp at the start, so you can go straight into that. But I guess really the one thing I can finally say that is spoiler-free is that the game is very, very tongue-in-cheek and very, very self-aware and plays a lot of that stuff for laughs.
And also, it moves along at a reasonable clip and it's not too long. And I think you have a great time the whole moment.
Without wanting to sound like we're just advertisers, it is cheap and short, so there's no reason to not give it a go if you're interested.
Yep.
Spoiler time?
Yes, now it's spoiler time.
Now it's spoiler time. Okay.
Activate the spoiler klaxons.
So we're probably being overly cautious here because the game reveals this very early on, like in the first 5 or so minutes of play. You go through these first few levels of the character, like, because it's sort of, you're a little pony and you're running along and you're jumping over fences and it's just this really, really shitty 2D platform.
Yeah, it immediately starts very bleak, which I was surprised about. And then you're right, it does sort of reveal what's going on, which is that the game developer is Satan.
Yes.
And
the Prince of Darkness himself, Lucifer Morningstar, cast from heaven for rebelling against God. That Satan is the developer of this game.
That really rolled off your tongue. Like,
yeah, I'm impressed.
Anyway, and like, he always wants you to give him your soul. That's like,
yeah, it's this great moment very early on where you finish the first little pony level and it gets to this point where it's like, you know, you hit a paywall and it says, you know, to continue Pony Island, insert your soul to continue. And it's just this moment where I remember playing that for the first time and not expecting that at all, because like I said, I had none of this stuff spoiled for me. I just looked at it and I was just like, huh, okay then, this is where we're going with this one.
And I feel like a lot of my problems with the game was because I was expecting it to be more horror, and so I was trying to interface with this horror aspect of playing the devil's game. And the game's just trying to make jokes at me, and I'm like, no, we're supposed to be serious and afraid.
And scared of the devil.
And you're not. Because it's not. Because it's all played for jokes.
And Satan is basically, it's I don't think it's like completely fully explained, but this game is sort of a way for him to entice people pledging their soul to him. And if they refuse, they become trapped in the game. So this is like the punishment for people who fail to swear fealty to him, but at the same time he's very proud and like he's put a lot of emotional investment in it.
Not only this game, every game he makes, he's made like heaps of games before as well, all of them kind of about ponies.
And so like, because the game kind of breaks down very quickly where like you go through this pony thing over and over and over again. But then eventually you kind of have to hack your way around it. And that's the main actual gameplay of it, is you're doing these very basic pathway type puzzles that sort of aesthetically simulate coding for you to hack your way out of this trap that he's built you into.
Yeah.
And as you do that, you get to the desktop of the computer that the game's running on. And so you can see old games that he's developed in the past, and you can access the IM system and talk to other trapped souls.
Yes.
And all of this is just done very, very cleverly and presented very neatly. It's sort of difficult to explain how well packaged all of that is.
Yeah.
But there is something quite satisfying about how that unfolds.
Yeah, they don't go overboard with it. It's relatively streamlined. Mm. If something isn't meant to be accessed, you can't do it. And if it's a joke, it happens.
Like,
and you're never really not sure of what to do. It always is pushing you forwards into just continuing on that adventure and trying to beat the devil, I guess. Yeah, that's a weird thing to say.
I guess escape the devil is probably a more reasonable goal.
I mean, you gotta beat his game, but and there's also moments where you as the player character, like, again, I was trying to interface this game, like, seriously, and I feel like that hurt my experience and how I felt about it, because there's all this stuff about the devil and your character and who they are and all this. Just don't worry about it.
I think that because it is, when I went into it, as I've said, I had no expectations whatsoever. And so the only thing I expected is what the game gave me. But when we're talking about this particular thing, this idea of like a comedy experience that's based on these, this very, like, the religious kind of theology.
Yeah.
I am not great at that. I don't know how accurate it is, but it seems like the person who made this game, like the real world developer, understands that a lot better than I do.
Yeah.
Like, they have real names and real events and things from, like, extra-biblical religious dogma, if that makes sense. Like, the stuff that didn't make it into the Bible.
Yeah.
But I still get the sense that a lot of the things, that a lot of the language and stuff they use is real.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I think that because of all of that stuff and what they're exploring, and there are moments that are actually quite like, oh my God, what is happening here?
Yeah, affronting.
That are a little bit unsettling. It is a very delicate tone to maintain. And so if you've gone into that expecting horror, I think even just that tiny little offset, that tiny grain of sand can throw off the balance of that machinery. Whereas I think maybe I was lucky, maybe it's just, you know, you were particularly sensitive to it. I'm not sure.
Again, as I said earlier, I don't know why I was so negative against this game.
Yeah.
It's only after having played it and having thought on it that I had fun. And it was it was just an enjoyable experience. And it was, I like to think that someone just, it's the thing I always love, it's just someone who knows when they have good ideas and executes them and then doesn't waste your time too much.
Yeah.
I mean, that being said, some parts of the game, this puzzle solving kind of programming thing, it was enjoyable, but then the rest of it's this pony platforming jumping game.
Yeah. And if there is one, like, I think that the pacing of the game is overall quite good, but the problem with games that are this short is when you have bonus threads where you can try and get more bonus tickets or explore some of the old games that Lucifer's thrown into his recycling bin and stuff like that.
Find your information about your past.
Yeah, like all of these little things that are Easter eggs or whatever.
Yeah.
They affect the tightness of the pacing in something this short much more than like getting the bonus content in like a 60-hour game would, because a 30-minute distraction in a 60-hour game is not even a blip on the radar, whereas a 30-minute distraction in a 2-hour game is a quarter of its runtime.
Sure.
And so I think that that's very delicate as well. And there were some points where the pony hopping stuff got a little bit tedious.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, because my first playthrough, I went for all of that bonus shit, whereas on this playthrough, I just went through the center story.
Yeah.
And I thought the pacing was much worse on my first playthrough than on my second. And so I think that that's in part because I was bogging myself down.
I was going
to
say.
But I wouldn't be able to bog myself down if that bonus content wasn't there.
Sure, but that could be something that someone else is looking for or enjoys more than you.
And if I had done them the other way around, like the quick playthrough the first time and the bonus content playthrough the second time, maybe I wouldn't have any complaints at all.
Exactly. I understand that sometimes the lack of self-discipline we have when we see all these shiny baubles and we want to collect them all.
That may come up more than once in our Until Dawn Let's Play. I don't know how aggressively I've cut that down, but we'll see.
We'll see. Anyway, apart from that, there are these kind of, for want of a better term, boss fights within the game.
Mm.
And I think each one of them is sort of represented in a different way.
Yeah, because there's one or two that are done in the pony sections, but most of them are done in the puzzle section.
Now that I think about it, most of them actually contain elements of each.
Yeah.
Especially with the smaller
bosses.
All
of the boss fights are exciting.
Yeah.
I don't think there was any boss fight where I was like, fuck this, this is bullshit. This might be too much of a pun for some people, but I think it's fun. the goal of the game is to delete the core files in the game to break it and then escape the machine.
Yeah.
And these core files are protected by demons, which is a programming term for a process that runs in the background of a computer. Hilarious pun.
Oh.
I thought it was clever. I liked it.
I only just got it now. It's all right.
And this is, again, where some of that religious iconography comes in, because like all of the demons have particular names, which I think are the names of real demons and
totally.
or from theology and all that kind of thing. But the mechanics that you use to confront these demons and get to the core files are very interesting. So, like, there's points where you have to out-code one of the demons.
Yes.
And there's another point where you have to, like, actually confront them in a pony fight and, like, shoot pony lasers and use your pony wings to dodge their horrible attacks. So all of that's very fun, but I think that, and this is where we're like flatter. If you have listened up to this point and are now excited to play this game, this is a really big spoiler that if you're planning on playing it, trust me, just play it, because this next thing is so much better if you're not expecting.
And it was such a highlight to experience.
It's the high point of the game. But John, why don't you talk about demon number three?
The demon number three is Asriel.
Asmodeus,
excuse me.
Yeah. Jesus fucking Christ, John.
I'm so sorry to get the name of that demon wrong.
It's like you don't even know how to speak Latin.
I don't. It's so interesting because it's so simple, right? All he does is he tells you, just look at me.
Yeah.
All you got to do is look at me and I'll ask you some questions. And that's it, right? And then the game proceeds to trick you in every way.
But this is the thing, like, it's so, like, that sounds so easy, right?
Yeah.
But it's so clever. So this game can only be bought on Steam.
Yeah.
And it can only run on Windows operating systems, I'm pretty sure. Which normally I fucking hate. I normally fucking hate that. But this is the rare exception to that rule. So he is, like, his little icon, it's like a file icon, it's dead in the center of the screen.
Yep.
And he'll talk to you about some stuff and he'll say, like, write my name or write the number of the beast.
Yes.
But if you're not looking directly at his icon when you're doing that, he'll flash up little clues, like, actually write 777 or whatever. The ways he distracts you, though, like, oh, this is so good. He says, type in something vile. And so you'll say something, like, disgustingly insulting to him, right? And after you type it in, a Steam message box pops up from one of your friends
yep.
and it's like, who's like, dude, what the fuck? Why did you just say that to me? And you're like, what the hell? And you try to open it up, but it's all just simulated by the game. Like, they pull a friend name and icon from your Steam list. They fuck it. They fudge it over your overlay.
And then it becomes double-sided.
Yeah.
Because you realize this and they go, okay, I get it. But then you're kind of curious to see how they're distracting you.
Yeah.
And so you get distracted by enjoying the distractions.
Exactly. And like, there's a point where they fake a crash.
Yes.
Right? And the thing comes up and then you have to click and it's like, Windows has encountered an error, wait for the program to respond or close the program. And if you don't click wait for the program to respond, you fail that section.
Yep.
And it's just, it's very clever. And saying it all, just laying it all out like this makes it sound trite.
Yeah.
But playing it in the moment, it's just, it's...
I think you're right when you said it was the high point of the game.
Yeah.
And that was even when my cold, bitter heart was like, this is pretty clever.
And of course, he's asking you all of these questions and his characterization is very fun as well, because he's all like, well, my AI has vastly outgrown its original purpose. And so, like, he's transcended Satan's reason for progenating him. And he's all like, well, just have the core file.
Yeah.
He says something hilarious, like, after centuries of guarding this core file, death will be a grand adventure.
Yes. Oh, it was just so wonderfully over the top.
Yeah, it's just very, very well done. Is there much more you want to say about Pony Island?
No. I enjoyed it more than I thought I did, but I think it's important to realize, it's going for jokes and it's going for laughs, and it was fun. And it had a good time. So.
Yeah, I've sort of danced around this issue a few times, but I'm just going to... I feel like it's worth saying once more. Slowpokes is all about catching up on shit that we missed out on because we're busy and because we have to dedicate our emotional energy and whatever to other things.
Yeah.
This is very satisfying for a very, very low investment of both your time, your energy, and your money.
Yeah.
And I think that... It was worth playing.
Yeah, totally. I agree. Well, I think we should now move on to our next game, because this is a double game bumper special.
Didn't. I don't know. That's the news logo coming up, I guess.
Oh, because the news of Super Hot, the other game that we will discuss.
Super Hot. Super Hot. Well, I think the first thing that I can say about Super Hot is that it's the most innovative shooter I've played in years.
Oh, it was made in a shooting game jam, and I think that shows because... it's trying to do interesting things within that space.
Now, I feel a little bit self-conscious about probably explaining what Super Hot is, because it fucking exploded when it came out, like was properly released.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
Every single person who's listening to this has probably seen footage of people playing it, or the like the basic concept.
Yeah.
But yeah, the raw concept is basically that time doesn't move unless you do.
Yeah.
So if you're not rotating or walking or anything like that, time is basically still.
It does move along.
Very, very slowly, though.
But yeah. And the game itself is very striking with these white backgrounds and red characters.
Yeah, bright red characters.
Very instantly recognizable. I know a lot of people, like you said, like a lot of people were talking about this game, and I found it to be very visually appealing. I honestly don't know why I didn't play it until now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, for me, it was basically, I think, I'm going to be honest, probably the biggest barrier to entry was cost. Like, I know that this is something we're planning on talking about in the Sad Zone, but even at time of recording, Superhot is still $25, and that's a year or more. No, that's 18 months after it came out. I'm not going to be the kind of person who says who's saying that a particular game should be a particular price because it's not it's not 60 hours long and I deserve more content for my money or whatever.
That's not the point.
But for me, it was kind of a... Maybe when it's on a Steam sale or something like that. I think that's a big reason why I didn't play it until
now. We can talk about that a little bit later, but I can understand that sometimes these pricing things, they're like little hurdles and little drop-offs.
Mm.
You know, when something fits into a certain price bracket, you can make that purchase easier, which marketers and other capitalist systems know and exploit to this day. Yeah. But
like some people have to count their coins, you know, like that doesn't... Those people should be considered when you set the price for your game.
I am one of those people. I think should count my coins. So I do, you know, it comes into it, especially if you're trying to buy, God forbid, every game that comes out these
days. Yeah, exactly. The reason, like, we are kind of getting bogged down in that now, but the reason that I brought that up is because my expectation and my understanding of what the game was this cool Matrix-style, action-based, innovative kind of shooter. So I want to play that.
Yeah.
When I heard about that, I was like, yeah, I want to play that.
Yeah, to me, I can't deny that I find this game super cool. Like, I look at this...
Super hot, even.
Super hot.
Super hot.
Let's not do this for
hours.
Yeah,
okay.
even though I want to. But yeah, I just found it so cool. It looks so unique and dynamic. And I am a really big fan of shooters.
Mm.
Like, I've played so many over the years, and this kind of distilled the idea of a shooter and moving in a space and being aware of your surroundings and how that all interlaces together. Just from a visual, you could just get that from looking at it visually, right? That's what it was all about.
Yeah, it's communicated really, really well. There are complaints. There's literally one complaint I have about how this game looks.
Yeah.
The whole thing is designed to be very readable. So enemies are red, the environment is white, and anything you can pick up is black.
Yeah.
The one tripping point they have is that they make bullets red also. I believe the bullet itself is black, but the trail is red, and the trail is what you can actually see in reality. And so when you've got red enemies firing a red bullet...
Bullet trail, yeah.
But yeah, they're firing... For 98% of what you can see of the bullet is red. When you're an enemy's pointing a gun at you and fires a bullet, so the bullet is almost always between you and the enemy. Sometimes it can be a little bit hard to see. But other than that, like, it's really, really well done, how readable they make the environment.
Yeah, I didn't encounter that too much because when I started playing it, you just engage because of the time-slowing mechanic. You know, it does give you a lot. So I do grant that that's probably one of the only areas, but I just find the rest of it so visually appealing.
Oh, God, yeah. And this is one of those things where they probably knew that the bullets were slightly harder to see because of that, but adding a fourth color would just kind of wreck. Like, what are they going to make them, orange? Like, I can't think of something that would work.
That's a great point. Like, the game has a wonderful palette. It understands the visual impact of it.
And that's probably the reason. They recognized that looking good was better than being readable.
Because, you know, it's something to be said for looking cool.
Yeah. Especially because, like I said, it's very Matrix inspired. And you really get that sense when you're like throwing guns at people and like knocking people out and ripping the guns out of their hands and all that kind of stuff. they have this really awesome glass aesthetic as well, where like all of the characters have that polygon sort of look to them.
Yeah.
And when they get injured or when they get killed, they break like glass and you hear the glass shatter. And
yeah, they just shatter into these pieces and they all fall over each other and they just collapse or stand or tumble as you're moving through them. So it's...
It looks so cool in slow motion. Everything looks cool because it's in slow motion.
We have to put some clips up somewhere. But like, just I love when you jump, you can hold the space to slowly glide.
Yeah, and as so you if you're jumping down from the top of a stairwell onto an enemy below, you can do that in slow motion as well. It's just, it's so aesthetically compelling and it just feels awesome. And the pacing and the visceral reaction you get from every shot that every gun fires.
And they knew that too. You can tell they knew it because they built in a sharing function for the videos.
Yeah, of course.
Into the game itself. Mm, right?
Every level has a replay after it. So like you can watch in not quite full speed, but closer to full speed, the whole thing that you just did.
Yeah.
In slow motion when you were playing it, and it looks very cool. They added in a third person mode, which is okay, but it's still very cool looking. And
totally, but you can just take those videos and share them and just have fun. And it just looks cool.
And that's part of the reason why I'm so certain that most of you have seen something from it. Now, what I think is worth mentioning as we get to this point here, maybe it's spoiler time. Drop a spoiler.
Yeah. We'll start talking about some of the spoilers.
Everything that you know about Superhot is exactly what I was expecting going into it.
Yeah.
There is a lot more to this game than that. And once again, it's short. If you've been considering playing it, maybe it's already sitting in your Steam list, play it now.
Yeah.
Because me not expecting what the game actually presented to me massively increased my enthusiasm for it.
I think that's always the case with these small, short experiences.
If I hadn't known this shit was coming, I don't think I would have been anywhere near as interested in what happened than as I was when I was actually playing this recently.
No, that's true. I agree.
Yeah. Once again, very spoiler sensitive.
Okay. I think everyone's now jumped off or continuing forward.
Yep. Now you and I can just have a conversation alone.
Yes. As we always do.
Or I guess, you know, there's probably people who have already played it. Anyway, we'll start with the smaller of the spoilers. About halfway through the game, you get the... I guess, what's the body swapping mechanic?
Yeah. So you get the ability to jump into... other like characters or the enemies that you encounter,
and my god, that is just so much fucking fun.
It's really interesting too. So when you jump into another character, they immediately drop whatever weapon they were carrying.
Yeah.
But this is my trick, my favorite thing to do.
I think you are going to say the exact same thing as I'm about to say.
Which is just when you throw the weapon at someone, then jump into them, then catch the
weapon that you've just thrown. Yeah. In katana mode, there's a mode where you play through every level, but you only have a sword and you can only pick up swords.
Yes.
That was my favorite trick, is I'd throw the sword and then swap into a person and catch the sword and cut the guy in next to me in half. It's so fun.
And after you've beat the main game, it does unlock these endless and challenge modes, which were very reminiscent for me personally of Metal Gear Solid's VR missions. So with the Metal Gear Solid games, they would release one version and then they would like release a version with VR, which would be like hundreds of different missions or random permutations or sometimes whole other storylines of the main campaign that you would just run and there were time trials.
I really need to clarify this because we are in an era where this clarification is important. John... in real life, did not put on a VR headset to play this game.
Yes,
this was Snake entering an in-world VR system to do training missions
or
whatever.
You're right. I forgot that is a thing that could confuse people now that we have actual VR, like market ready.
There is not yet a Metal Gear Solid VR game, pretty sure.
No, it probably won't be. Oh, Kojima.
I mean, they're just now starting Zombies, so we'll see.
that's about 10, 15 years behind. Anyway, but it does have all these modes that were very like reminiscent for me. And I love these challenge modes, going through perfecting scores. And the game is like built for that speedrun kind of experience too.
Yeah, and see that, again, like that's all I was expecting. Like this tight, mechanically based speedrun type thing. All of the challenge modes, like I'm probably going to go home and play more of it. I played the core story and then all the way through on katana mode. And then they also have like retro mode where it's like the original prototype of the game. And my God, it looks so much worse.
Yeah, you can actually find that prototype online. It's totally free and we'll put a link somewhere. But yeah, you can play that prototype before you play the main game itself. Yeah.
and not have to spend $25 on it. Yeah, so the challenge modes are a lot of fun, and just that raw...
visceral feeling of
visceral, that
fighting.
That alone is probably worth the price of admission for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Now we get into hard spoilers.
Yep.
Because now we're going to talk about the plot. The game is presented in this
DOS
menu sort of thing. And like what you're playing is not a game that... So it's sort of like a sort of game within a game type thing.
Yeah.
It's not that your character has bought a video game and is playing it. It's this thing that's like people are hacking into these servers that are run by this corporation.
So when you launch the game, you basically are launching into the character's computer, and within them there's things like photos and videos and other things.
Yeah, a lot of fun stuff.
There's also hacker chat news and stuff like that. But basically the game is being shared by a friend of the player character, for want of a better term. And it's just this thing that exists that people can experience.
Yeah, and like one of the options you can go to in the menu is like hacker, is it called IRC? But like hacker chat rooms.
Yeah, it's like guru chat.
And they're all talking about
the game.
They're all playing super hot as well, and they're talking about how, oh man, I tried to hack into it but couldn't, oh try this trick instead and all this kind of thing. And they're talking about different levels that they've gotten up to and all that. But so it's all very clandestine in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not supposed to be playing this game.
Yeah, no one's supposed to. People get kicked from the chat for mentioning it outright.
And it's amazing because every level is different. And, like, one guy's talking about how, you know, I was in a prison cell and then all of the cells opened. It's like, oh, yeah, I was playing as the person who opened the cells. You're welcome. And it's like, but I had to fight all these other prisoners and... So it's really quite fascinating, and more than once as you're playing through, you get these red messages that pop up on screen, and they boot you from the game. They're all like, "You shouldn't be here," and
not even from the game within a game, from the whole game.
Yeah, there are points where they just flat out close down, super hot the game that is running on your computer. And so all of this is very fascinating. Like I said, I wasn't expecting any of it at all. And so it's very surprising to me that, like, there's this weird kind of ominous, threatening presence and you're doing something dangerous that you're not supposed to be doing. And like,
and it's trying to warn you to stop.
Yeah. And so they have you in the eyes of this character and you're often chatting with your friend or with, like, this presence that keeps booting you from the game. And whenever you hit a key on the keyboard... it types a message on the screen that's pre-scripted. Like, you have no control over what your character says, but there's something very compelling about that. Like, that sounds very cheap and very easy. It's like, oh, they had this dialogue system, but they didn't want to make it difficult. Why do I have to type anything at all? But there's something very disempowering about that, and that feeds into all of the themes of the game.
But it also becomes very personal, because you're there sitting in front of your computer, typing on your keyboard, words are appearing, you know, and this story is progressing. And that, I found that so engaging. Even though the text itself wasn't one for one, right? Just the act of typing itself is just that kind of muscle memory kind of thing that just pulls you in a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that that's very true. And again, it's also got this sort of CRT style aesthetic to the screen. And so, you know, there's the fishbowling and all that kind of stuff. It does make it feel very hackery.
Yeah.
And so hitting buttons on the keyboard, as you say, completely draws you in. As this sort of malicious presence tries to... because you keep coming back, right?
Yeah,
and there are points where you'll jump into the chat where you're like, you'll try to play the game, you can't load it in, so you go back into the chat room so you can get more advice on how to play it. And the messages that you're giving are things like, I need to keep playing, I can't stop playing. And that's
everyone,
the sentiment that everybody is giving, that they're all hooked on this. They can't help but want to play it.
I mean, you as the player character, you're traditionally, you want to play this game.
Yeah.
Right? It puts you in a very interesting situation because you'll want to have this experience. Sure, it might not be the compulsion that the characters within the game are having, but you, because you are in that sense removed, you can, well, like easier... engage in the idea of coming back to it again and again and again. Even as it pushes you away, you still come back to the game.
Exactly. And like, even like, there are points where you can just, the mechanic, like the, I don't know, like the conceit, I guess the conceit of you as a player of this game always have the option to stop playing. It is something that we're seeing a little bit more in different games. And this is a game that uses that. Like, when it says stop playing Superhot, I, David, can if I want.
Yes.
I just walk away. But there are narrative threads that are left hanging, and the game never tells you to stop playing at a point where you would be bored with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You always want to know what else is happening and what's at the other end of this thread.
It always kicks you away when it raises you up to that height.
Yeah. And so as this game is, as this presence is trying to, you know, discourage you from playing the game, it starts becoming more aggressive and sort of threatening you. And there are points where it'll show, you see these little flashes of images, and then the next time you're in the chat room, you're all like, that was an image of my room. I mean, it didn't look like my room, but I knew it was somehow, like in a dream. The other person's like, oh yeah, cool it, dude. Chill out. Just play more Superhot. You'll feel great.
Yeah.
And there's this really fascinating thing they do between, like, the addictiveness of this compelling gaming experience and sort of the danger that's coming with it. So, like, yeah, it's got the motif of super hot. Every time you finish a level, it goes super hot, super hot. And I don't know, it almost serves as this
mantra. It's like a chant. It's like a chant that's always there.
It's like, it's a thought that enters your own head and you, it's like brainwashing in a way. It's just, it's really, really weird. And, you know, you're going through it, and as the game plays out, you start to realize that the scenarios that you're playing through, like, this is predictable by this point in the game, but they're not, it's not a game. Like, you're entering the minds of real people and controlling them and, for whatever purpose, perpetrating violence. And it's to the designs of this corporation. And, you know, as the plot develops, you find out why, but it is very ominous. And even when you know shit's going wrong, your character is still like, well, I just want to keep playing.
Yeah. I think kind of it's... The narrative also has this discussion around singularity and the idea of oneself and who you are and how you interface. And that starts to get brought up in the game, not only in the main storyline, but in each mission, there are secrets you can find. Secret consoles that are tucked out of the way.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. They are, like, hidden. Like,
yeah, well, I got to go back and look for them.
Yeah, you got to go back and play the game some more. You got to go back and play Superhot.
Yeah, well, I mean, I honestly, I really, really need to.
The secrets are hidden around the level in a kind of glitch way.
Oh, okay.
Because the levels are these obviously kind of 3D rendered spaces, you kind of have to think outside of that box. It's basically all about not killing everyone in the level and just trying to find where the console terminal is, and you engage in a dialogue with the singularity itself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
See, I didn't get any of that. Like, because when you talk about the singularity, there are different sort of interpretations of that. So you're talking about, like,
the entity that you talk to when the red text appears. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm referring to that as a singularity.
Okay. Yeah. So you're talking more about, like, a one consciousness type thing.
Yeah.
Whereas, as opposed to the singularity being the point in human evolution where our models for future evolution break down because we so fundamentally change, like when we all turn into AI or when genetic engineering becomes a thing.
I mean, that also kind of relates because that's kind of what's happening in the game, at least from a narrative experience.
Like, it's so, like, there's that moment, right, where you actually first get the body switching mechanic and you've got the super hot repeating over and over again. And at this point, they're making you play it by, you press the left mouse button and then the E button, and the left mouse button and the E button, and the left mouse button and the E button over and over again. And every time you press it, it's saying super or hot or super or hot. And the screen is just peeling back. And the dial and the words that are appearing there are so terrifying. Because I'm trying to remember what they are. It's
basically on the lines of removing your own individuality.
Yeah, it was something along the lines of mind is software, bodies are disposable, the system will set you free, or something like that. That's over and over again. And it's just like, bodies are disposable. And, like, just how detached that is, right? And then that culminates in you getting this body switching mechanic, and you're like, and the, like, the concept of you overriding these people, and it's like, there's something that's very consequential. Like, you're very aware of, like, how, what's the, like, objectified these red shapes are to you, that they just...
No distinguishing features.
They're tools. They're just, they're just objects and vessels that you pass between at will. And every time you leave one, they die, you know? And, like, you're using these bodies against themselves to destroy each other. It's just, it is very, it's very heavy, you know?
Yeah.
And, It isn't played jovially or whatever. It's like, for something that's such a cool, like, yeah, Matrix it up, this is so crazy, the gravity that you have behind your actions are very disconcerting. And the fact that, you know, multiple times your character talks about how they have no control and they just need to keep playing, flat out referencing at points that they aren't controlling the words that they're typing and stuff like that.
No, the game just keeps raising those stakes. And I just love how your desire to continue playing is like, in a sense, the character themselves doesn't have any control because you're the one who's making them play the game.
Exactly.
And you're just feeding into that loop.
There's a great point where the presence has basically decided, look, I can't keep you out. I'm just going to use you. And so they trap you in this cage and they're like, try to leave. And if you hit escape, you can't exit the game.
Oh.
I hit Alt+F4 on my keyboard and quit super hot at that point.
Yeah.
Going to be honest, at least 5% of that was genuine fear. Most of it was just to be all like, can I be clever here? But there's this, there's this great sense that you're correct, that like in that moment, I had real choice, even if my character didn't. I could have stopped playing Superhot if I wanted to.
But you don't.
But I don't.
No.
I wanted to finish it.
Yeah.
There are moments where they go back to that idea of like, pay yourself a visit, and like you go to the room that your character is sitting in, and your character's got a VR headset on, and as you turn, you can see on their screen the thing that you're seeing through your own current eyes at the moment.
Yeah. That's why I probably will never play this game in VR, even though it does have VR. There's just a bit too much of that, and I'm not feeling like it, because when you let yourself go into this experience, I feel like it unsettles me.
Yeah, I mean, like I legit looked over my shoulder
as
I was playing that section, and you know, they get this. There's this great little moment where they're all like, punch yourself in the back of the head, and you wake up with a concussion and all that, because like, just to kind of prove that they know where you are and stuff. It's really quite cool.
Yeah, and I found like it really walked that line of seriousness very well. Like, I was worried it would be too over the top. I mean, it's grandiose, but it's not. It depends on your tastes. I didn't find it unpalatable. So
yeah, it's played straight, and because they commit to it, you don't doubt it.
But I do enjoy it, and I kind of want to go back to it still, even for those endless modes or the challenges and things like that. So you know, I had lots of fun, and I think the story is like the story is just this nice icing on the cake of that kind of like repetitive shooter that you thought it was.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's true. Do we maybe want to visit the sad zone while we still have a little bit of time here?
Yeah, let's go visit the sad zone.
This will be a sad zone for both games here. So if you are still listening, or you've come back in, or whatever, there's going to be spoilers for both. Sorry, but thank you for joining us. We're pretty much near the end anyway.
You know the deal.
You know where to find us. Go to our website. Yeah. You can see all our junk. But
not literally.
Yeah, okay. I mean, yeah, you can see all of our podcast relating material. Yeah.
There are other websites for our junk.
Yes, exactly. Visit Pornhub or something. I don't know. Love yourself. Do you? So, sad zone. Do you want to start with your sad zone piece, or should I?
So my sad zone is going back to that, what you mentioned before, the price, right? And I don't want to get into sort of money semantics too much. We all know what we can afford on things. Mm. That's a personal thing. Like, I can't begrudge anyone for choosing to spend money or not choosing to spend money on something, because that's a personal decision.
Yeah.
But when you do weigh the two games up against each other, Pony Island comes in at $5 on at least the Australian Steam store.
Yeah.
And then Superhot comes in at $25, really swinging for the fences. And I feel like that's a really big price disparity for what I would find as comparable kind of experiences.
Yeah. See, I would probably say that there is more effort and polish in Superhot.
Yeah.
It's a much harder game to design.
No doubt about that.
And it's also been in development for at least 3 years, I think. So, like, we don't want to turn up... I don't want to just, like, out of hand dismiss that.
Yeah.
But as far as, like you say, we as players walking away from the experience, what did we take away from it? I wouldn't say that Superhot was 5 times what I took away from Pony Island.
Not to mention, I do feel like it was one of the reasons why I didn't engage with the game over these years, even though I knew it was cool and interesting and I enjoyed it. Even when I played it before, a friend showed it to me, I still was engaged by it. I just found that to be a little bit of like a...
Like, that was relevant for both of us.
Yeah.
You know?
It just feels like a hard jump. And, you know, I'm not saying how things should be priced. I just want to point out that it was a bit of a distinction. And I was...
Yeah. It caused you to ask questions. Like, that's not a price point. When you look at, like, Overwatch and see that's still whatever it is, $70,
like,
right?
50, 60, 70.
You look at that and go, yeah, but that's Blizzard.
Yeah.
You know, like, it doesn't, like, cause you to, you know, quite so much as this super hot price tag does.
Yeah, it's not the end of the world, but it was noticeable for me.
My sad zone point is a little bit more general. It applies to both of these games, but part of what makes me consider it is that they is because the two of them were put next to each other and, like, my feelings about it. I've complained about when I was in uni and doing, like, poetry classes and stuff, where people would come in and their poem would be about how hard it is to write poems and how they can't think about what to write in their poem and they're concerned about how their poetry would be received,
yep.
right? I fucking want to strangle people who write that.
Ooh,
because
boy,
it's not insightful, it's trite, it's a done to death, and it's so terribly self-indulgent. I'm not there yet with games about games, but just at the edges of my brain when I was playing Superhot, I'm like, the next game I play that's a game about gaming or a game about making games, I'm going to feel it. It's going to be a lot more consequential to my experience of that game, the fact that I'm kind of getting tired of that now. With Pony Island, the first time I played it, didn't have that problem at all, right? With Superhot, like I said, it's just coming into the sides. And I think that you made a very good point before we started recording. We've played Beginner's Guide before Superhot, but I played Pony Island before Beginner's Guide. And Beginner's Guide does so much of it so well and explores so many aspects of it, right? Like, Pony Island is more about the game dev side and jokes at the expense of game devs.
Whereas Superhot is kind of about the obsessive culture around
Yeah, exactly. And, like, that relationship with, you know, specifically shooters and the kind of the disconnect we have from the violence of what we're doing in a shooter.
Yeah.
All of that stuff was done in Spec Ops The Line 10 times better than it was done in this. And those issues and others were done in Beginner's Guide of all of these Spectra better than it was kind of done in either of these games. I think that what saved Pony Island in a lot of ways was that it was tongue-in-cheek and was funny and was at the expense of game developers and that process. Whereas Superhot is a lot more, as we've said, it's played straight and it's played quite seriously. And even though I found all that stuff very compelling, like I said, it's just starting to become old for me.
Yeah, I think that it depends on what the experience is and how it's told. Like, I can't comment on a game I haven't experienced yet. It doesn't exist, right? And I don't know if I get burnt out in the same way. It's all going to depend on how a story is told
exactly.
and the mechanics for which it is. I can understand that, like, yeah, if people aren't going to be doing new and interesting and dynamic things, yeah, sure, this idea will get boring, just like every idea gets boring. I didn't count that at all, but I can see why it would come forefront as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point you make. Like, I was over zombie games before I played Last of Us, but Last of Us does a very interesting and compelling story in that world, you know?
And there's also sometimes a genre or an experience is something you'll never tire of, right? So, you know, we're all different.
Of course, I'm speaking incredibly personally there. Like, I burned out on zombies 8 or 9 years before apparently anybody else did in games.
I think I will never burn out on zombies.
Exactly. You know?
People always go, there's so many zombie games, and I go, there's not enough. There needs to be more. Like,
and it's also about how cleverly you do it, right? So you've got Journey is an example. Journey explores the idea of the hero's journey, like Joseph Campbell's universal story kind of breakdown.
Textbook.
And if the game had done it less well than Journey did it, I would have just fucking hated it because it would have just been so up its own ass and so self-indulgent. It's like, yes, we all fucking know what a hero's journey is. It is the Wilhelm screen of narrative structure. But Journey did it well, and they did it compellingly, and they had nuance, and they used a lot of indirect storytelling methods and all of that kind of thing. So it's very, like, it's interesting and fun. And so there are plenty of games that could explore that can be about games, be about gaming, that would still be interesting and still be fun. The bar gets higher every time I play one, I guess is really all I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, again, like that, I always feel like with different media, people have different desires and they have different expectations. So that's not unreasonable to want more of that, you know, the same way that some people can just enjoy trash. Like, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I get that.
And of course, just to sort of underscore it, I am obviously speaking very personally there. That's not a universal dictate. That's just how I feel. Anyway, that's pretty much going to wrap it up. Thank you all for joining us, as usual.
Yeah, for our bumper double episode experience.
Yeah. We've made some pretty good time, so I'm impressed with us. If you like what we do and want to see more of that, you can head to iTunes and search for the Slowpokes Podcast.
Or look anywhere good podcasts are found.
Our website is slowpokespodcast.com.
Yeah, and honestly, that's like the hub. That contains everything, so if you ever want to find us anywhere else, we'll put all the stuff there. But if you do want to get in touch with us a little bit more intimately, Twitter is a good place to do that, especially if you want to talk to David a little bit more.
Yep, that's at SlowPokesCast.
Yeah. And then we also have our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/SlowPokesPodcast.
John runs that one, yes. So I'm shocked that he doesn't know the URL for that.
No, that's not it. I was concerned about forward and backslash.
Oh, right.
I have to think very hard.
Just slash is fine, I think, for most people.
Anyway, but yeah.
Yeah, and if you also want to check out our YouTube page,
which we hope you already have.
Yeah, you can head to YouTube and just search for the Slowpokes Podcast. I don't think we'll have a unique URL yet.
Maybe we will. Maybe we will.
I don't know. But yeah, we do have some stuff up there. We upload all of our podcasts, but we also are branching into some Let's Play content. We should just be wrapping up our Until Dawn full play there, I believe, if we've decided to go with all the episodes and that didn't get too dull.
And hopefully we can put some other stuff up there too.
There's a lot of stuff that you can do when you have a video as well as audio. So we'll see what that turns
into. We're always trying to think of new things to do and create time and energy with, like, forgiving.
Yeah.
So
that's our biggest hurdle, is whether or not we can actually fit it into our lives. If you guys want to see more of a particular thing from us, please let us know. Because we want to... We're only so good at judging this from the inside. Your feedback is always super valuable. As always, like, share, and subscribe. Everything, ratings on iTunes do a lot more than you might think. We really appreciate all of that work, and helping us grow and helping us dedicate more energy and stuff to the show.
Yeah. And now to get into the exciting final news for our next game, which will be.
Hey folks, it's David from the future. I'm interrupting because we've had some changes in our schedule, so the next episode that you will hear will be for Invisible Ink. That is a game that John has played before, and I have not. It is a very cool sort of indie stealth game, turn-based thing from Clay. So yeah, look forward to our next episode, and hopefully you'll enjoy it.
I can't wait for us to play and talk about it. So yeah, it should be fun. It
should be good. So join us in 2 weeks from here for that. Mm-hmm. In the interim, we also always have our off-week shows, if those are still happening.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, once again, let us know how you feel. Yes. But other than that, thanks for joining us.
Have a good one.